Hello and welcome to episode 8, Assessing the Health of Our Communities, of the Downtown Phoenix podcast. It's our inaugural series finale, and it's hard to believe that we are here, but welcome back. Our final episode of this inaugural series of the Downtown Phoenix podcast will take a look at the health of our communities. But in this episode, I don't mean things like economic indicators or housing statistics. Instead, I mean the general health and well-being of those who try to make our communities better and those who are inside those communities. This episode of the podcast comes on the heels of a community tribute and celebration of an individual who we lost way too early, the late Deborah Friedman. My guest on this episode, Melissa Geer, like myself, had the great pleasure and privilege to work alongside Dr. Friedman at the ASU College of Public Programs in downtown Phoenix from 2008 to 2011. One of Dr. Friedman's great observations and statements was the following: community building is very difficult and challenging work, and it is very important that we who are involved in this work take care of ourselves first and foremost. But sadly and oftentimes, assessing the health and well-being of a community in the way which we will on this episode, and the people in that community, is pejoratively dismissed as touchy-feely business. But it is one element of a resilient community and a hallmark of a healthy person. There certainly are many definitions of what community or individual resilience is, but one that I will employ here comes straight from the Resilient Communities website. A resilient community is the path to a safe, prosperous, and vibrant future for us, our kids, and our neighbors, despite an increasingly chaotic world. In other words, it is not an end game or an end objective. It is a process and a journey collectively embarked by one and many in a community. Now, you're probably wondering, why is this episode coming online on Tuesday, April 22nd, instead of Monday, April 21st? Well, there's a reason why this episode of the podcast is released a day late. In the original audio recording of last week's, or rather of this current episode, we encountered a technical difficulty. My two guests were Judy Butzin of the Cultural Arts Coalition and Melissa Geer. However, Judy Butzin was unable to join in this second recording session, or take two, as it were. You can learn about Judy's organization, the Cultural Arts Coalition, at our website, downtownphoenixpodcast.com. But I am very grateful that Melissa Geer was able to join me back for the second take of our conversation. This was recorded on Monday, April 21st, 2014, in the studios of Downtown Phoenix, Inc., in downtown Phoenix. And Melissa Geer, welcome back to the Downtown Phoenix podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Edward.
As I noted earlier, we were doing this again, and thanks to you for coming back on short notice, and we wish that Judy Butzin could be here as well, but I'll try and paraphrase some of the comments that she made from our first recording session, our first take, as it were, into this second take. So let's begin. Just explain who you are to the listeners. What's your story, your biography?
All right. Well, hello, Downtown Phoenix podcast listeners. My name's Melissa, and I'm a native Arizonan from up north, and I've lived in Phoenix for about the last 15 or 16 years. Currently, I'm residing in both Chicago, Illinois, and here. And I fell in love with Phoenix when I moved down here and was introduced to a community organization called Neighborhood Ministries right at the corner of 19th Avenue and Van Buren. Having worked for quite a few years in downtown Phoenix, primarily in low-income distressed communities, I was a non-traditional student returning back to ASU to finish my undergraduate degree when they were having forums prior to moving to the downtown Phoenix campus. And being a first-generation student, I didn't really know too much about forums, but I did know that the university is a powerful and influential institution with a lot of resources and an institution that has really the ability to transform the community. And so my hope was, as a student, how might I become involved to help my university become a good neighbor to the least of these in downtown Phoenix, those who would be heavily impacted by the economic increase in a new campus downtown and so forth. So at this forum, I had asked about being a good neighbor and garnering trust with small groups, and also about maintaining, preserving, and increasing affordable housing so that folks weren't involuntarily displaced. And as I asked those questions, the dean at that point who was leading the move, Deborah Friedman, recognized my questions and answered them. And after the forum, she pursued me for a deeper conversation. So where we met for the first time, I had gone back to the community in Phoenix and called a lot of my friends and said, hey, the dean wants to meet with me. What would you like for me to tell her about this move for ASU? How would you like for them to be a good neighbor? So meeting back with Deborah, I brought with me a 13-page agenda, which I now recognize is really a strategic plan. And I started working with Deborah after that first conversation. And one of the things that I had proposed to her was really acknowledging the arts community that has for a long time been revitalizing downtown Phoenix. The artists who have really worked and labored to develop community, to build a vibrant and beautiful and active, civically engaged community. And so how would the university really come alongside of them? And so the first thing that we did, also the students and staff appeared at that time to be a little hesitant about the move to downtown Phoenix because of the perception of crime. If it was it going to be safe? Would there be parking and would there be food? So what we did was we used the arts, the visual arts, to go inside the University Center, and adjacent to every single piece of visual arts, there was the mission of a nonprofit organization, the social story of what they did in the community that was adjacent and surrounding the downtown Phoenix campus, and then how our students could get involved, as well as the artist and the title. We had it to where if the art piece is sold, 100% of that would go back to the organization or the artist, whatever their agreement was. But we called it For Our Eyes because the idea of the visual arts was it made this new building more aesthetically pleasing, but more than anything, we hoped that it would move from our eyes to the hearts of our students and towards action, that they would start to see this new community to them and what a rich and wonderful resource of experts and knowledge that they had to gain from joining us in downtown Phoenix.
Which I think segues nicely to a good discussion, although the focus of this episode isn't necessarily on the arts, but a discussion about why are the arts important for things like storytelling, for sharing experiences. But I think apropos to the discussion on this episode, why are the arts important for community health?
So I think when we think about the arts and storytelling, especially when you're thinking about specifically the work between maybe a university and a community at times, is for the example of a university, we often go into a classroom, we become enrolled students, we learn from written English texts, and there's a very formal course of the exchange of knowledge and relationships and history. The arts, however, really transcend that segment of a community within the university, and the arts, not just visual, but dance, spoken word, all kinds of other performing arts, really have the ability to share the stories of the community from a voice that comes from within the community. And I think the exciting part about storytelling and building community through the arts is typically across the span of education levels or socioeconomics that the arts really move to engage any of us who might take notice. And I think for those who are traditionally more engaged in written text and learning through that type of writing and art, also have an opportunity to learn when they really start to have eyes and ears to see that within a spoken word performance or a modern dance performance, that there's a story there that's being told. And I think it's through stories that we get to know one another, because the storyteller has to choose to be vulnerable enough to put it out there. And the recipient has to be astute enough to choose to listen. And then at that point, we really have an opportunity to get to know each other better. And I think by knowing each other better and by learning one another's stories, we have an opportunity to kind of put an additional layer of humanity back on the other, some dignity, and hopefully find in those types of storytelling exchanges the way that different folks have different types of assets, and how might we work together as diverse communities to really bring together unique qualities that we all have to build a stronger Phoenix.
Which, I guess we maybe should ask this question. What does it mean, in your opinion, Melissa, to live in a community?
I think living in community or communities is always going to be quite unique, because from the vantage point of whose perception a community is how that's going to be experienced. So I know that that's one thing that I've grown to understand for myself better, at least, is that there isn't a community in Phoenix. There's many communities that make up Phoenix. And my life even joins and ebbs and flows in and out of different types of communities. And I think what builds communities, again, is our choice as community members of how we want to interact and respond and participate in communities. And so I think it's important, how do we build communities that we, as existing community members, create and form pathways that new members of the communities could identify and enter in with us. I think as kind of gatekeepers of communities, we have an opportunity to make that widely or narrowly available for people to join us. And I think as the new members, it takes a lot of courage to both enter into a new community, as well as being humble to know that the community that's in existence has a lot to offer you. So I think communities are often made up of different values and expectations and norms. And living in these diverse communities is, how do we recognize ourselves first as individuals and the values that we hold personally critical? And then how do we allow for those spaces that people who experience life and live in community differently than we do, or more in a unique way from us, how do we still choose to interact with them in a way that's positive, with just mutual respect and benefit? And I think that community happens when we're able to see one another and respect each other and learn from each other, and hopefully enjoy each other.
I think that last part is important, to enjoy each other. What brings us to this moment is this episode comes on the heels. On last Friday was a community event in tribute to our mentor, our friend, our former colleague, Deborah Friedman, lately of the University of Tacoma, University of Washington, Tacoma, rather. And she said once that changing lives and community building is some of the hardest work that's out there, and it's important to take care of ourselves first. One of the themes of that community event was certainly of loss. We're all still stunned by her passing. But what is some of the shared stories of community would certainly include, you know, how to react and respond to loss. So back to the quote from Dr. Friedman, just what's some of the importance of that quote to you?
So that quote had come in a card, actually, from Deborah, one of the last handwritten cards that she had sent me, and it said, take good care of yourself, because changing lives is the toughest work there is. And really, as I think about that, for each of us who do community work, the typical experience is that there's a lot of us out here doing community work and advocacy, and we're impassioned by it. It wakes us up in the morning and it keeps us up at night. And most days we really enjoy it. And I think a difficult thing for a lot of us doing this type of work is when there's so much work to be done in the areas of our interest, when do we create time to pause for ourselves so that we can care for ourselves, so that we can be sustained in this work, so that we can be encouraged when discouraging things happen? Because absolutely, if you put a whole bunch of passionate people in downtown Phoenix, we're certain to have talented leaders and influencers have different points of views. So there's going to certainly be times where one side of the viewpoint is going to seemingly win and the other side is not going to quite get the outcome that they had hoped for. And so as we continue to do this work, it really is important that we take care of ourselves. And I think for each of us, that's going to be really different. However, a great challenge of us as community activists and community builders is, first of all, recognizing maybe that we're getting a little bit tired, maybe that we are able to admit when we're disappointed, and then to give ourselves the grace, and ideally in a community or in communities, give one another grace and encouragement that taking a rest is okay, expressing disappointment is okay, and how do we come alongside of each other even when we have differing viewpoints, and encourage each other to continue the work, because we all want to continue to see Phoenix become a more vibrant community. And the best way for that to be achieved is when every single one of us is participating in the dialogue and the activity to build a better community.
As Judy Butzines of the Cultural Arts Coalition said on the first take of this conversation, she used the acronym LEARN. For laugh, exercise, the arts, relaxation, and nutrition. And for the relaxation, one of the words that was used was mindfulness. I know you and Judy have know a lot about each other and have worked together in partnership on a lot of projects. Can you talk a little bit about mindfulness?
Well, mindfulness, again, is going to be expressed in each of us so differently. Mindfulness for many, especially now, is waking up and going to yoga in the morning, walking your dog in a park, having a cup of coffee by yourself or with a friend. In Judy's case, I know that a lot of times what she'll do is she'll put an honoring box in the doorway or entryway of her home so that she's reminded of someone's special event or difficult experience, that kind of puts that person in her reflective mind to be thinking about. I think various people of different faiths practice it in different ways. I think artists do it by creating ideally their art. I think there's a lot of therapeutic ways that each of us can be mindful about our work, and maybe slowing the pace of the many tasks that are always kind of moving on our plates and around us. How do we pause regularly to catch our breath and regain our focus and be slow to kind of move forward? So I think being mindful in part is, Howard Thurman is a mystic activist, and he had once said that kind of rather than looking for what the world needs, think about what you love doing, because what the world needs is for each of us to come alive. And I think being mindful is being aware of what it is that makes you come alive and then choosing to rest, that we don't have to do everything in downtown Phoenix, but ideally we're doing that what brings us alive.
So then what are, you touched on this a little bit, Melissa, and I'd want to explore this just a little bit more. When we recognize we, the individuals in this community, trying to make this place better, in partnership with others, when we recognize that we just need some time away, we just need to recharge, what are some ways that we can go about doing that? Where, and maybe where are some places here that can help facilitate that and help us as we recharge and relax?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think even in your own space, enjoying at least a song or five a day that you like of your own playlist, and putting aside even that amount of time to do that. Journaling, of course, is something that helps a lot of folks to just process, get things out of running around in your head and put them down on paper so you can go back and look at things over time and how your emotions around those or your clarity for next steps came to be. But there's also so many beautiful places in Phoenix that we could give ourselves permission to go and visit. I think in downtown Phoenix, one of the most beautiful places is the Japanese Friendship Garden, and you can go there and rest. And if you haven't been there yet, it is a fabulous place and a surprising oasis in the heart of downtown Phoenix. There's also the farm kind of in South Phoenix. There's canals to walk on. There's places to bike. Margaret Hance Park is a fabulous place to spend time. There's Encanto Park. And how do we just find spaces? But again, the first thing is that we have to recognize that we're feeling worn down. And then we have to give ourselves permission to take care of ourselves. So when you mentioned Judy's other items about her acronym LEARN, laughter is the first part of that. And I think finding time to go out with friends and family and laughing, even if you've had the worst board meeting ever that day and you're frustrated out of your mind, how do we find and create spaces to laugh and have a good time? Exercise can be overlooked, and we know that we should do it. However, it really does help us, and you can do that. And a beautiful part possibly about exercise with community builders, you can walk around your neighborhood. And so you're getting to know your neighborhood. You're seeing and hearing the sounds of your neighborhood. You're becoming familiar with the small businesses, with the families on your street. And in that, your eyes start to see your community because you're out there walking. I know Kit Danley, for example, over at Neighborhood Ministry, she would call these things prayer walks. And so for her, out of her background, she would do these kinds of things. So you have a multiple layers of self-care. She's exercising. She's being meditative. She is paying attention to her community. And then out of her background, she's also praying or creating kind of a vision for the spaces that she influences. And then the last letter of that is nutrition. And again, eating well and being hydrated, especially in the desert, it's important. And I think, and Eddie, you had said this before, how all this kind of self-care can be looked at as touchy-feely.
Right. As I commented at the beginning of the show, it almost has, when we talk about community health, if we're not looking at the economic indicators or things that can be measured, it's almost pejoratively dismissed as, touchy-feely and almost unimportant stuff. But I would argue that it's absolutely the most vitally important stuff that there is.
I definitely agree with you, because we do. We so easily think, oh, well, this is for psychology, or this is frill. Mm-hmm. We have work to do. Well, the reality is that leaders, be them elected or non-elected leaders, be parents or young students in middle school, folks who are influencing others get tired. Mm-hmm. Physiologically, we cannot keep up with going all the time. And so if there's not space for us to relax and recover, then we lose our leaders. And Phoenix has to continue to be a destination where we attract talent and then we retain them. And we know a part of retaining folks is, sure, having a great economy, having affordable housing, having arts and entertainment. But if we look at any of those things, housing is for stability and rest. An economy is for jobs and security to provide. And the arts is to enjoy. So even as we look through those things, it's imperative that as individual leaders and friends of leaders and peers with one another, that we give each other permission and encouragement to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves. Because in Phoenix, we do not want to lose one of our leaders, one of our influencers, to being burned out.
Talk to me a little bit about, and this would be a question that I think Judy would want asked, coalition building and some of the ways to go about that, especially as we focus on building and sustaining community.
So Judy, absolutely. If she was here, she is the founder and executive director with Melanie Ohm for the Cultural Arts Coalition. And I think that they, and I observe with them, that they are committed to working together. And so doing this kind of work, developing communities, building communities, that multi-sector collaborations have to happen, because just as different individuals bring different assets and contributions to community work, so do different organizations. And so being committed as organizations to work together and start to recognize when there's a threat of competition, how might we look at that differently and look at that for the opportunities to work together so that both organizations or multiple organizations could benefit at the same time? I certainly see a lot of that happening at the Downtown Civic Space Park, at Phoenix Center for the Arts, at Local First Arizona, at ArtLink, through the Downtown Phoenix Partnership. There are so many groups in Phoenix who continuously are seeking to build these collaborations and coalitions, because the more people that you have activated in your city, the more engaged and the fuller vision you have for your city. And again, all these coalition partners will not see things the same. However, when we work together, even through conflict, it strengthens the outcome. Ideally, it has the opportunity to strengthen the outcome, because all of us do reside in this community together. And so how do we build a more vibrant, diverse, fuller way of interacting with each other? And I think in collaborations and coalitions, there is a dance that happens between sometimes the strong suit of one organization will be able to pick up where another organization lost its resources or isn't able to really perform for that task that's at hand. And so when we know each other, even organizationally in the community or institutionally, we know who to look at to come really lead an event or hone in on a policy change and things like that.
Melissa Gehr, thanks for coming back and recording take two of our conversation.
All right. Thanks, Eddie.
You can learn more about the work of Melissa Gehr and Judy Butzine, as well as the Cultural Arts Coalition, at our website, downtownphoenixpodcast.com. We will be back with the remainder of the Downtown Phoenix podcast after this. As we come to the end of this inaugural series of the Downtown Phoenix podcast, we have been doing a lot of thinking about what will come next. But before I get to that, it has been no small task to produce these weekly episodes, and a lot of thank yous are in order. Thanks to RJ Price and Anna Consi at Downtown Phoenix Inc., whose partnership with the Downtown Phoenix podcast and Edward Jensen Urban Productions, and whose hospitality made this initial series possible. Thanks also to T.W. Lawrence. And great thanks go to my guests who have spent some time out of their day to join me. In order, Dave Kreider, Gigi George, Ann Wheat, Chris Floor, Phil Weddle, Lillian Habish, John Talton, Paul Lumens, Mark Melnichenko, Feliciano Vera, Jennifer Longden, Melissa Gehr, and Judy Butzine. Their conversations inspired us, called us to action, and reminded us of the power of this community and this place that we call home. And thank you, our listeners, for making the podcast a part of your weekly routine and your toolkit for community advocacy. So what's next for this project, you ask? We are going to take some time off to rethink what we will do here in future series. We are planning to take a deeper dive into the processes and goings-on in urban Phoenix and learn how those all work. We'll look into civics, civil conversation, a community public square, and an assessment of what makes good urban policy. We'll also start to look at having our first community conversations event, which will be in late August or early September. So we have a busy calendar ahead, and we are definitely not going away. And with that, we will wrap up this episode and this inaugural series of the Downtown Phoenix podcast. Please stay subscribed to the podcast's feed in iTunes or in your podcast receiving app, because we'll update it with miniature features as we get closer to our Series 2 launch. We'll be back in June for Series 2. Thank you so much for being a part of this journey. This is the Downtown Phoenix Podcast, an Edward Jensen urban production.